Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. It's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, and I'm David Todd from The Hammer Speaks. The Steelers coming off a 14-3 win over the Cleveland Browns on Thursday night, Dave. Another win in the books, a lot to talk about. Injuries, Ben's performance, a bunch of things. Maybe we'll change the format and shake it up a little bit today.
Yeah, sounds good. What a game last night. I wrote about how Ben Roethlisberger is a black and gold cowboy, and you know, coming off the heels of Mike Tomlin's comment last week, although it was related to Josh Cribbs about we've been dead Indians in his cowboy movie enough, that when Roethlisberger came back in that second half, my mind immediately raced back to that, and Ben Roethlisberger was the cowboy on Thursday night.
Absolutely. Well, Dave, let's get right into it, and let's go through the kind of a topical format today to discuss the game, and let's lead off with Ben, because there's no question that Ben is the guy who controls the reins on this team. When I saw the injury, I said he's obviously done for the game, and I would guess a high ankle sprain. If it's not broken, if he's broken, he's done for the season. If it's a high ankle sprain, he's probably out 3 to 4 weeks. Well, lo and behold, we all saw what happened. Ben came back I hate to use the word heroic in a sports term, but a really gutsy fashion to come back and contribute. And the couple things I take away is, as Brett Kiesel said, that Ben is the toughest guy on the team. Kotchery said, that guy's got my respect forever for how tough he is. That's kind of on the one side. On the other side is Charlie Batch looked absolutely abominable. And if the Steelers are to lose Ben for an extended period of time, there's a lot to worry about.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, the heroics of Ben, you know, when we saw that injury happen, of course, the NFL Network showed it to us 15 times. It got worse every time you saw it. I'm with you. Boy, you should have seen my timeline, man. People saying season's over immediately after it happened, going crazy. And although I do admit it did look bad, that's what they have doctors for. And we've seen Ben do what Ben does before. You know, I admit that when he went out of the game, I did not think he would be back in the game. The way he went to the locker room, was limping around in the X-ray room and all, but you know, when he was taking those snaps on the sideline for the beginning of the second half, you just got to shake your head. And Ben enjoys moments like that, I think. He doesn't enjoy the pain, but I think Ben enjoys the look of the cowboy, of the guy that you can't destroy. And, you know, I guess in the long run, we all should not be surprised. Now, Charlie Batch aside, you know, let's face it, he was only in the game for what, a couple series there, to end that half, the two passes incomplete, took the sack there, and he got crumpled over. I thought for a moment he wasn't going to get back up on that one where he was crumpled over. But let's face it, you know, if we don't have Ben, it would be a hard, hard road to change what this offense does. You would have to become primarily a running game. You're not going to be so reliant on the big play or the extending the play that the Steelers are. So, yeah, I mean, he's not Byron Leftwich at this point, and you have to wonder next year if it's going to be, you know, if they re-sign Byron Leftwich and insert Grizzly veteran here as the number three quarterback, because I do not think Dennis Dixon will be back either.
Right. I agree with you on Dixon. I guess one of the things that I find a little bit frustrating about the NFL, if you're a fan of a team, and we saw this last week, the Steelers did actually pull Ben. But one of the things that you see guys do in college, and this happens all the time, is, you know, certainly you have more blowouts in college. You have situations where guys get in and get a chance to run plays. But one of the things I always liked about Steve Spurrier is when he put in his second-string quarterback, he knew this guy was eventually going to get playing time, and he had him run the offense. And, you know, if you're just going to put a guy in to kneel down, then I don't really care. You can have Ben in there. You can have Batch in there. You can have Troy Polamalu in there for all I care if he's just going to kneel down. And so, you know, Batch ran a little bit of the offense in the fourth quarter against Cincinnati and didn't look good doing it there, didn't throw the ball well. And I just thought he didn't look good in his reads yesterday. He was tentative of the way he moved around in the pocket. You know, look, I'm done guessing in terms of Ben, you know, projecting what his injury status would be. But typically, the average player, the average bear, is out kind of 3 to 4 weeks when they have these types of injuries. So, you know, obviously that's a difficult situation for the Steelers because the game that really matters or the game that is the most difficult on the schedule the rest of the way is obviously the one coming up next, the Monday nighter in San Francisco.
Yeah, and do you think that, you know, and I wrote in my article this morning, you know, this is a nationally televised game like last night with an even bigger audience on Monday Night Football. The buzz outside of Tim Tebow for the next week and a half will be Ben's performance in this game. Do you think there? Do you think it would? You would literally have to, I think, cut his ankle off for him not to try to go in this game on Monday night. Because, like I said at the start of the show, Ben loves this crap, man. I mean, if you saw the sit down interview with Michael Irvin pregame, he does feel like he's severely underrated as a elite quarterback.
I have a little trouble agreeing with that. He may not be considered in the Manning, Brady, Breeze, Aaron Rodgers category, but he's the next guy on everybody's list. When they talk about good quarterbacks in the NFL, if the list is more than three, Rodgers, Brady, and Manning playing this year, Rodgers, Brady, and Breeze playing this year, Ben is the next guy without doubt.
Well, so, not according heading into this offseason, because we've had this talk about Phillip Rivers and all, too.
Oh, okay, but that's done. I don't think anybody's having that conversation anymore.
Yeah, but why should they have?
you know, Rivers has been a good quarterback. I mean, he's put up good numbers. He hasn't won a lot of playoff games, and some of that's on the – but, you know, look, the debate is I don't know that Steeler fans can say that, you know, Ben isn't considered the at least, at worst, the fourth-best quarterback in the league.
Yeah, I mean, he is, and but I still think he gets enough slights that I think he has a chip on his shoulder, and I think it showed last night in that interview.
I think some of the slights Ben gets is because of his off-field behavior in the past, and that's unfortunately only time's going to make that go away. I mean, I was in the bar last night, and, you know, you hear the comments from non-Steeler fans just like, you know, oh, you know, it's going to make him harder to, you know, grab a girl in the bathroom stall. And, you know, everybody says it with a chuckle and everything, but that stuff's not going away. And there are plenty of people who don't like the Steelers. And so, you know, I think Ben, through his own actions, is going to wear a little bit of that, you know, for the rest of his career, which, yeah, it is what it is. But, yeah. Dave, as we get into, you know, let's go further into the injuries. And, you know, if you want to talk about this, the next guy and his Pouncey and the same type of thing with him, and, you know, it was written today in one of the papers that guys coming back from a high ankle sprain for the second time come back maybe a little more quickly because their body's dealt with it before. The injury doesn't swell up maybe as much as it did the first time because it's not a new injury. But the thought is then, again, with Pouncey, is he needs a lot more leverage than Ben does to play his position. He's obviously going to be a big question mark going into Monday.
In fact, I worry about him right now more than I do Ben, to be honest with you, because it was the same ankle that caused him to miss the Super Bowl. And he's had it dinged since then, I believe, and he left the stadium in a boot. And he, you know, I admire that guy's toughness, too. They were trying to get his ass out of the game. Chemo came into that game, and you see that shot of Pouncey shaking his head that he didn't want to come out. Now, he was hurting the team at that point, but not. They finally got his butt out of there. But I worry about more about his status for Monday night than I do Ben right now at this time. Of course, both of them are having MRIs today. I think they've both been described as high ankle sprains. And we'll just have to let the weeks play out. Pouncey said, you know, he's going to play in that game reportedly. They all say that, you know. But right now I worry more about Pouncey than I do Ben, if you can believe that.
And just to wrap this injury thing up, anybody else on the injury report that I know we had Troy got a little dinged up and a few others. What's the word that we got from Mike last night and the early word today?
Troy, hamstring tweak, I wouldn't expect him to miss time. I think they mostly held him out precautionary there. Ziggy Hood, a groin, that'll be interesting to see going forward. So I don't know the severity of it yet. I don't think anybody does. We'll know come about Tuesday or next time Tomlin speaks and the first practice report. But that one could end up being a game or so. Excuse me. Emmanuel Sanders, there's word that that foot might be a little troublesome and might cause him to miss some more time going forward. I forget what the actual report on there was, but some aggravation in one of those surgically repaired foots that could force him out of even a few games going forward here. And so we'll have to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, and in fact, somebody, you know, I think this is just rank speculation, but somebody said it could keep him out the rest of the regular season. And, you know, you have been right about this all year long in terms of, you know, that can cause some problems. And then obviously the knee injury was bothering him. It's something that we didn't know. He wasn't even on the injury report for a couple weeks there, and then all of a sudden he's going under the knife. And if it's in that same leg, you know, you have a knee injury and you got foot problems. Well, obviously they're going to aggravate each other. So it sounds like the Steelers are going to keep him on the sidelines until he's 100% healthy. And, you know, we'd be guessing as to guess, you know, to say when that would be. So yeah, Ziggy, I agree that'll be an interesting thing there. Obviously depth on the defensive line now becomes a question mark. You know, Hoke obviously on the IR for the year. Aaron Smith's been out since week five or so. So, you know, there's not a lot of guys behind there, and it'll be interesting to see how the Steelers manage that and what they do going forward, depending on the severity of Ziggy's injury. Dave, the second topic is the big topic, not related to Ben, was James Harrison's hit of Colt McCoy late in the game. He got there was a face mask contact. He got immediately flagged. Colt McCoy lay on the field for a minute and then came off. I think there are three big things coming out of this, Dave. And the first one is obviously, will James Harrison be fined and or suspended? You know, what did you think of the hit and how things were going? And the third thing is, are the Cleveland Browns going to be fined and get some kind of punishment for sending Colt McCoy back in the game? They reported after the game he had concussion-like symptoms. The NFL has taken a very hard line on this. We saw the Steelers in the Kansas City game. Troy was a little bit woozy for about 30 seconds, cleared all the baseline tests, but they didn't put him back in the game in the whole second half because of NFL guidelines. And here, the Browns put Colt McCoy back in the game about 5 minutes later, and he finished up, and now it's reported he has concussion-like symptoms. So why don't you lead off with your thoughts on Harrison and the hit in general?
As much as I would like to try to defend Harrison on this one, I can't. Plain and simple. You know, I've got an animated GIF up on SteelersDepot.com. I went through the play several times, several angles. All James has to do is bury, is to hit lower in that situation. As soon as he made contact with the face mask, with the top of the helmet, whether or not he thinks Colt McCoy was a runner or not at that situation, especially as much as he's been in the crossfire over, you know, last year, you know, I just can't defend that. Okay, he's going to get fined on that. The question now becomes, will he get suspended? I really do not have a good read on that. You know, if they're going to suspend Sue for multiple violations, and his last being just merely stomping on a guy, which was flagrant. I don't know how you can put. I don't know if they're going to label this flagrant or not on Harrison. But being as he is a repeat offender, I will leave it at this. It would not surprise me if he gets a one-game suspension on this. As far as Colt McCoy goes, the Steelers have been blasted with this concussion-like symptoms, you know, terminology and all, and certainly they have not let guys return to the game, you know, especially the Paul Amalo incident that you last said, and even dating back to the one against Jacksonville as well. They held him out of the game. I don't know how they're going to approach this. It'll be interesting to see if there's some sort of memo by the league that comes out, or if the Browns are indeed fine on this. I tell you what, I do not like Colt McCoy's dad getting involved in this. I would be pissed if that was my dad.
I didn't see that. What did he say?
He's just basically pointing fingers at the Browns, saying that they shouldn't have put his son back in the game after basically suffering a concussion.
Yeah.
And you know what? If my old man did that, we'd go toe to toe. And, you know, that's between McCoy and the organization, in my point. For you know, I understand that the dad being protective of his son, but that's an internal matter and all, and it's just going to make things worse for the Browns right now at this point.
Well, you know, on the last topic, I'd just say that if you know, what you don't want there is the player having input on the decision. If the guy is concussed, then he's not, you know, if there's a question of whether he's concussed, he shouldn't be having any judgment as to whether he's going to return to the game. So in that respect, I can understand where his father's coming from. So I didn't see the quote, so I'll leave it at that on there.
What did you think about the Harrison hit?
Yeah, Harrison is – here's what I think. I saw the hit. I turned to the guy next to me, and I said, that's absolutely embarrassing. He's going to get suspended for two games. I saw the first replay. It was helmet to helmet. He said, just what you thought. He had an opportunity to not have his helmet so high. I didn't understand the hit, and it's one of the few times in my life I've been embarrassed to be a Steeler fan because we've all defended James Harrison to the T for the way he plays and love his aggressiveness, and I just really thought that was I thought it was a cheap shot. I thought it was a little bit, to draw the hockey analogy, I was embarrassed to watch Matt Cook elbow the guy from the Bruins last year, and you know, I felt a little bit of that with the Harrison hit. Now, I read something today, and that's pretty much how I felt up until about an hour ago, and then I read something today from Peter King, of all people, who, you know, I'm pretty lukewarm on Peter King at best, and he wrote in his article today, and I'll just read a little bit of it here. Here's where the debate comes in and why I believe it would be hard for the NFL to suspend Harrison. If McCoy was viewed as a runner, which he surely would be while having the ball tucked under his arm with no intention of throwing it, then once he is out of the pocket, he is treated like a running back, not a quarterback. And a runner can be hit helmet to helmet without penalty. But if a quarterback leaves the pocket with the intention still to pass, he loses some protection from the rules of being the pocket. He can be hit low, and the one-step rule about hitting a quarterback after the release of the ball goes away. So there is some nuance there that I didn't give credit to when I saw the play originally. No question Colt McCoy tucked the ball under his arm for a stride or two, and then, you know, pulled it up and threw to Hardesty. And the biggest question mark here is then in that 1.5 steps that Harrison took, did he have time to realign and reconsider the situation or what was going on? So, you know, I don't feel quite as harshly as I did. I think your point is right on. He had a chance to alter what he was trying to do, and he didn't do that. But now I think maybe there probably won't be a suspension, but probably a $100,000 fine.
Yeah, probably not that much. I would say, I don't know, $100,000, that might end up being it. I just think he could have lowered. I think he could have done more damage to him if he would have hit him right in the chest. I think he still knocks him out of that game because he was a defenseless guy at that time. He had just completed his throwing motion. I think Harrison really could have knocked him, you know, out. Probably broken a damn rib on him if he had buried him with a chest hit. But we're going to have to wait. That'll be the topic for the next several days, though, most certainly.
Yep. Dave, one of the things we've seen from the Steelers is the changing of the guard a little bit this year. And one of the things we've seen in the last 3 weeks is three veterans fumble in the red zone. We had Weldy Moore early in the Kansas City game fumble on the 2. And yesterday, two of the Steelers' most kind of hard-nosed, control the football, tough long-term Steelers. Really, at the time, it didn't look like they were going to be costly turnovers because the Steelers were dominating the game so much. But both Hines Ward at the 15 and Heath Miller at the 8-yard line fumbles. The Steelers turned the ball over both times, didn't come away with points at all from any of that in the half or until very late in the game. Just general thoughts on ball protection. Just this kind of stuff happens, and it's just coincidental that it happened, you know, twice in three plays.
Well, they were good hits. I will say that. I think the one on Heath Miller was a little bit better hit than the one on Hines. It just comes down to ball security and Steelers versus Steelers, as Mike Tomlin likes to say. Those were brutal. I mean, if you cash either one of those red zone trips in, then, you know, the game's not even as close as that. Maybe you don't have to worry, you know, about bringing Ben back into the game, which I'm sure he would have been back anyway. But those were pretty brutal. And, you know, Heath Miller on his, it looked like he was kind of out of control after making the catch. The arm swang back and then swang back in the other way. Joe Hayden made a good hit on that, I thought, to dislodge the ball. And the Hines Ward one, I just really don't think you can see a good angle on it. But, you know, you've got to protect a football, and that's all I'm going to say on that. Both of those were brutal turnovers. Thank God Troy Polamalu got us one in between the two to kind of erase the Hines one and put us right back into position. And what a play by Troy Polamalu on that play, basically reading and baiting Colt McCoy into a throw that he should have never made to pick that ball off. It's hard to believe that was Troy's first interception of the season, but it really set the Steelers back up in a great situation, only to have them fumble the ball over again.
Terrible choice by McCoy there. Couldn't agree more. Really not good. Dave, maybe the most exciting topic of the conversation today is, does any team that right now have as dynamic two receivers as the young guys have in Mike Wallace and Antonio Brown? And is it actually possible that both of these guys could go to the Pro Bowl, meaning Brown, maybe if he doesn't make it as a receiver, would go as the AFC return man?
I don't know if he has another two or three games like he's had. He's on one hell of a streak right now.
Just to throw it out there, since I've got the numbers right in front of me, on the season now, Mike Wallace has 62 receptions for 1,034 yards and 16.7 yards per catch. Antonio Brown has 55 receptions for 925 yards and 16.8 yards a catch. Difference in TDs, Wallace has 8, Brown has 2. But certainly the tide has swung the last 4 or 5 weeks to Antonio Brown being the guy who's really doing the damage.
And I tell you, it's a testament of, pick your poison. And when you throw in, if we can get Emmanuel Sanders back for a few games, imagine what it becomes then. And then you have guys like Jericho Cotchery, which is basically, we've called it Hines Ward insurance all year. He's going to be good. You know, if he's forced to be into a game in a situation, he can make you two or three catches. You've got Heath Miller. There certainly is not enough balls to go around. But let me tell you, that back shoulder throw from Ben to Antonio on that final touchdown, and Joe Hayden is a fantastic cornerback. But the stop that Antonio stops on a dime and gives 9 cents change on that play. And even though Hayden slipped on the play, there's no way he makes a play on that ball, in my opinion. And then once, of course, Hayden falls down, Brown is off to the races at that point, makes some nice moves down the field. I thought Roethlisberger comment after the game was cute too, that I sure am glad Antonio would have scored, because would have never made it down there.
Yeah, might have had to call timeout to get down to the other end of the field.
Exactly. And I don't think there is a better group of receivers. Now, let's not let Antonio totally off the hook. He still makes mistakes. What young receiver probably doesn't, though? He also had a drop in there on third down of an easy pass that really got Ben's ire there before he got – I think that was before he got injured. But a dangerous guy, and it has to be a defensive coordinator's nightmare right now trying to stop these two.
Let's get into play calling a little bit. Everybody talked about the Browns' very poor run defense, and there was a lot of thought that the Steelers would come out and run the ball, and instead they came out and threw the ball all over the field and just had a field day. I think the numbers before Ben was hurt, he was 8 of 9 for 100-plus yards. The Steelers moved right down the field basically 3 straight times. So in many ways, I think you got to credit Tomlin and Arians for how they approached the game and what they saw, and knowing that the Browns were probably going to load up after getting gouged by Ray Rice last week. And then to follow that up, there's the huge question mark of being up 7-3 in the second half of a game with your quarterback hurt. You just have a touchdown called back when Mike Wallace, clearly the right call by the referees in both touchdown reviews. Colt McCoy short of the goal line, and it ended up costing the Browns 4 points because they ended up kicking the field goal. And Mike Wallace knee down at the 1.5-yard line, and it ends up costing the Steelers 7 points because they take four cracks at it from the one, and they don't get in. What are your thoughts, Dave, on just the general play calling and then the goal line situation?
First of all, I hate to pat myself on the back. Who am I kidding? I love to pat myself on the back. I said my seven things to look for. Logic tells you that the Steelers will run all day on these guys, and that'll be the focus of the game. But when you got a quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger, the offense that relies on such an explosive play, I noted in my article that if Ben has fewer than 25 passing attempts in this game, I would be surprised. And I'm firmly convinced had he not been injured, he would have easily had that number, because he ended up having 21 on the day, and missed that time before the first half expired.
The only way that wasn't going to happen is if they put up 35 points by the third quarter.
Right, exactly. And I thought they were going to throw the ball. I had also noted that I thought the Browns' defense was kind of overrated as far as the passing statistics go, as far as their pass defense. I thought Ben would expose them in that, and he did, both injured and uninjured in that game. I kind of thought they would have used Heath Miller a little bit more in the game than they did. But in the end, he would have had three catches had one of them not been called back from Big Juicy there. And his antics that he had on display. Overall, I like the play calling. Now, when they got – and everybody's screaming on Twitter, run, 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 run. Hey, once Ben went down, you had to know that those guys were going to stack the box, as often as they can, because they're kind of expecting runs. First and second down. On first down, okay, I'm fine with a play call there. Second down, I'm fine with a play call there. If you look at that play, though, Kimoato, he was kind of late on that counter lead into the hole. Mendenhall runs right up his back there pretty quickly there. Kimoato decides to turn it up instead of taking out the linebacker at that point. If Kimo even puts a finger on that linebacker, I think Mendenhall walks into the end zone.
I couldn't agree more. He was late to the hole.
Okay, and on third down there, that was an obvious pass play. Ben checked to the run on third down there. The only thing there I would like to know is, was that a one option pass play when they overloaded it to the other side and Ben saw that he changed the play? I would have liked him to see him change to something other than an interior run on that play to give himself a better opportunity for a touchdown there, instead of just running it right up the gut. The offensive line wasn't terribly good on those red zone sessions, and thus the first three plays you had what you had. Now on fourth down, I've got to be honest. I think at that point, with an injured quarterback, with only a 7-3 lead at that, at that point, I think I would have kicked the field goal there. And you go up seven, you're forcing the Browns to come back and drive the field for a touchdown to at least at the very best tie the game. So let me throw this back at you. Should they have kicked a field goal there?
I didn't have any problem with it. Most of the people I was with who were on your side thought they should have kicked it. I didn't have a problem with it. Look, your quarterback's hurt. And as you pointed out correctly, he checked out of a pass play on third down. I really like play action on first down. I think if you run on first down, they're looking for it on second down. So, the play calling for me was fine. Run in place every time. At some point, your line's got to blow their line off the ball. You get four cracks on the one, and you didn't make it. So I put it on the offensive line. You could have run wide once, but again, it would have probably had to be a toss sweep because Ben had trouble. He had mobility problems, just some of the basic handoffs he had trouble making, and so stretch plays were going to be tough to do. So it probably had to be a toss sweep. You wonder if running some kind of little end around or something there would work. But I don't second guess it. I said when they were doing it, I liked it. I liked the aggressiveness. I generally always like the aggressiveness from the 1 yard line, and they just have to do a better job.
Let me ask you, the other talking point everybody's flooding the Twitters with and all, Redmond, do you think he would have made a difference in that situation?
I guess hindsight's 20/20. We've seen Redmond run. the old line in Pittsburgh is, or in any city, is everybody's favorite player is the backup quarterback. You know, in the past year or so, it's become everybody's favorite player is Isaac Redman, the backup running back. Nobody talks about Redman when he has, you know, 4 carries for 3 yards, and they talk about him when he has 8 carries for 57 yards. I don't know. I don't have a problem with having Mendenhall in there. I think he runs hard. He wasn't dancing at the line. He was hitting the holes aggressively. And I give Cleveland credit. You talked about that one linebacker. If he gets touched on that play, he walks in. That guy hit Mendenhall high, and he stopped him dead. It was a really good hit, because that's the type of hit where if he hits him low, Mendenhall falls forward, and it's a touchdown. And so he had to tackle him high, and he did his job. So, you know, I'll put it on Kemo and Gilbert and the rest of the guys up Foster, the rest of the guys up front, before I'll put it on Arians, Tomlin, or Mendenhall.
Yeah, I think execution, people fail. They always want to look at play calling. They never want to look at execution. That was a situation where they didn't win the war in the trenches right there, and I'm with you. Whoever's in there, the blocking depends on the guy scoring there, especially in that situation, as many bodies as you have in there. I thought both Redman and Mendenhall, though, especially in the second half, boy, those guys ran like Tomlin used the word, the hair on fire with Curtis Brown last week. Both of those guys and the offensive line, for the most part, outside of that red zone and the play of Kemo Otto, I really thought had a better second half. Now, Gilbert got a chewing out by Sean Coogler, according to the radio guys, for some of his miscues early in the first half there with the false starts and all. But I really thought they came together as a unit better, sans Kemo, in that second half.
Yeah, had a really big third quarter. I think Mendenhall had 8 or 9 carries for about 60 yards in the third quarter. And obviously that was important stuff with Ben being hurt. Let's get into the kind of, we've said all the nice things about Ben. The Steelers, a little bit better job taking the ball away. But generally, what are your thoughts on the up and down play of defense? They gave up 200 yards in the first half. Obviously, 80 of that came in the first drive, or about 80 of that in the first drive. When they held Cleveland to a field goal, and they played better after that. But Colt McCoy had a very up and down game. The first quarter and a half of the game, he looked great. He made some difficult throws, and I think after that, really after the interception he threw that Troy picked off, I think he was terrible. I mean, he just looked awful. He looked like he couldn't get to his second or third read without worrying about getting killed. But the defense, there was the big play, the third and 20 where the 28 yards on the ground when the Steelers went press coverage and had 10 across the line, and the Browns had the perfect play call, not quite a draw play, but a stretch handoff that the guy hit right up the middle. And, I'm sure they walked to the line there and said, boy, do we have the perfect call against this defense. What are your thoughts on how the defense did?
I like the play of the linebackers, man, especially Larry Foote, I thought, was very good inside. I thought Timmons had a great game. I thought Jason Worlds, boy, he was able to get pressure. He got him 2 sacks in the game, basically by fighting off of a block behind a play and then using that speed of his to get those sacks. The last one, of course, coming on I believe, the Browns' final offensive play on fourth down there. But I really saw him fight hard. I really liked his play and all the linebackers for that matter. Larry Foote, oh my God, he just blew up a running back on the sack that he split with Steve McClendon there. If you watched him come on that blitz and that running back try to pick him up, he just blows him up, fights through him, and McClendon and him shared that sack. Defensive line, Steve McClendon, once again, he blew up that goal line run early in the game.
Yeah, he submarined the guys. Foote made the hit there, and you're right to point that out. I didn't know at the time who had made the play, but I think it was McClendon, and he was in the backfield just off the snap of the ball, and that really that let Foote have a clear run at Hillis.
Yeah, James Harrison also collapsed his side on that play. Casey Hampton also was was in on penetration on that play, and Larry Foote, all he had to do was clean up the trash right there coming at him at that point. That was fantastic line play. I thought Kiesel, when you go back and watch the game, the little things that he did really was well. Now, Cameron Hayward, I think he might have missed a stunt on that long draw play on the third down. It looks like Brett Kiesel's slanting inside into the A gap there. It looks like, I don't know if Hayward missed an assignment. Like it looked like he was supposed to loop around into that open open gap there, I think, and he would have met the ball carrier head on. We might never know that. Maybe it was just a great play design on that, but you never like to see those long backs get those running backs get those long draws on those third and forevers, and you know, letting the guy kind of run free there for a big gain.
Well, yeah, you know, the answer is we never see the Steelers in in that kind of defense in long down and distance. And I thought at the time, you know, well, it's a nice change because certainly the Browns aren't expecting this. But having said that, they didn't get a lot of pressure on McCoy on the previous third and 15, and he was able to complete for a first down. And so they had converted some first down. So I thought giving him a different look was a good idea. It just, you would think they'd have somebody in the middle of the field there a little bit more. But again, I'm not going to question that call. The Browns happened to execute right and call the right play against it. I'm not going to question that call because I've been asking them play a little bit more of that defense. Just, you know, that was the time when I turned to the guy next to me and said, they get paid to play too. You know, they did something right. So give them credit for that.
Yeah, William Gay had a great game in a secondary, although that one pick of McCoy, you better make that play.
Somebody called that a great interception. I was like, well, you know, McCoy underthrew it by 3 yards, so that's you got to get that.
And once again, props to James Harrison. He had the deep pressure on the play, forced McCoy to get rid of that ball that probably should have been thrown, you know, a second, half a second, three-quarters of a second sooner on that play. I thought Gay also had another great pass breakup in that game. Could have had a second interception. He recovered nicely on the deep ball into the end zone earlier in the game. He also made some key tackles in the game as well, oftentimes not allowing the guy to get out of bounds and keeping the clock running. So hats off to William Gay last night on his play. Troy, he got the interception in there. Overall, I thought it was a good game by him. Ike Taylor, you know, he got beat on a double move kind of early by Mohamed Massaquoi. One other time, I think he kind of got a receiver got away from him. But overall, hey, they only allowed 3 points on the scoreboard, man, and that's when it comes down to it. That's what counts the most.
Yeah, it does. And you know, we talk. You know, you've written a lot about big plays, and the Browns had three pass plays of more 25 yards or more, which is they haven't had many of them this year, and we haven't given up that many of them. So that, you know, just the scoreboard, as you say, is the final indicator. The Steelers got the W. I just think the defense probably didn't play quite as well as the 3 points might lead you to believe against a not very potent Browns team. So a little bit of concern. I think they've got stuff to work on against San Francisco. They're going to face an offense again that's going to try to ground the ball run the ball on the ground and grind it out. Put more explosive at the wide receiver position with Crabtree and Vernon Davis at tight end. But again, I didn't think it was a stellar performance. I think it was a good enough performance, and that's what got it.
Hey, real quick about the officiate. What did you think about that overturned call to Antonio Brown? Is there any way
thought,
you have?
Thought it was a terrible call. I was really pleased the Steelers got a first down right back to Antonio Brown on the next play because I didn't hear I couldn't hear what the official said, but there was, you know, I was talking about what a terrible challenge it was by Schumer because it was such a low leverage challenge early in the game to be wasting one. And I was completely shocked because it was clear to me, A, that Brown had both arms under the ball. I never saw from the angles that they showed on television, and they didn't show any good angles, I never saw an angle where the ball touched the ground. And if they're talking about the shape of the ball changing with the pressure that he has with his ribs and what else is around the ball, I think that's a bunch of hogwash. There was not irrefutable evidence or anything close to that in my mind.
Yeah, me either. What did you also think about the neutral zone infraction, I guess, that they called on Kiesel?
They just flat got it wrong. Flat got it wrong.
Yeah,
left end moved first, the left tackle moved first, and that was it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, two big plays right there. The James Ferrier unnecessary roughness call. If you go back and look at that frame by frame, it almost looks like he's trying to stop, you know, he's trying to stop himself and have his hand out to try to slow down McCoy.
I don't think Ferrier had bad intent there, but I think he was careless. I think if you go into that and you want to stop McCoy, you go in and you got to bear hug him and make sure he stays up and you stay up with him and then pat him on the ass on the way by. I think it was the right call when he did it. I was, you know, you watch that play in live speed, I would have thrown the flag as well.
Does he get fined for it?
I think he will get fined $15,000 for it, but you know, he can appeal that one and maybe get off. I think they'll, you know what? I'll take it back. I don't know if he gets fined for it. Maybe $15,000 is excessive. I don't think there was any intent there. I just thought it was stupid. And, you know, you're not used to seeing stupid things from James Ferrier. So the fact that he's got a clean kind of track record in his career and all the things that go with that will certainly play in his favor. I'll come back at you and say, is Chris Kimoatu going to see the field again this year?
You know, they're talking about Trey Essex now playing the left guard. But the bad thing is, if you have to have Essex play left guard, you're just not. It takes away some things that you do in the playbook, in my opinion, with that counter lead and that counter pike that they like to run. So, boy, tough call. Normally, that's Kimoata's bread and butter. It was not last night, and the penalties. You've got to look at the penalty situation there first. I mean, if you're going to hold the guy and don't let your hurt quarterback take a hit. But, yeah, we're seeing this lack of concentration, lack of execution with him. I don't know. Let's just hope it doesn't get to this, and let's hope Pouncey comes back and plays. But they might just sit him down out of pure principle to see what Essex has there at left guard. I don't know. Maybe you put Essex at center and let Ligurski play left guard. I kind of doubt that happens, though, with, you know, Essex just not an accomplished center and really only just started playing it. But tough call right there, and I don't know. It'll be interesting to see it going forward.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Dave, we're at about 40 minutes. Should we just move on to our picks for the week, and we'll wrap up some more of the win last night in our Monday podcast when we go over a few things that will be unrelated to the game when we get a little more time.
Yeah, real quick, I want to gig you about Greg Little.
Yeah, Greg Little didn't do much, did he?
Nah, that guy's got the drops. He's bad. And like I said the other day, I just don't think this guy – I think this guy is a number two receiver, and I think he's nothing more than that. I do not think he's a number one guy. I think they need to go back into the draft again and get him a number one guy.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's a rookie, so we'll give him all the rookie things that come with that. Nothing too impressive. Massaquoi, you know, a big first drive. Two big catches in that drive, and then very quiet after that. Peyton Hillis and Hardesty. You know, Cleveland ran the ball reasonably well. The 28-yard, you know, draw play on that 3rd and 20 really was the thing that did it. So, you know, look, it's a win. I think the Steelers win that game probably by you know, three touchdowns or more if Ben's healthy throughout. But, you know, the turnovers hurt him a lot. And you know, Cleveland turned the ball over as well. But, you know, everybody can move along. And I think the fans had basically overlooked this game and just you hope nothing bad happens. And unfortunately, a couple bad things did happen. And, you know, certainly on Monday we'll have more of an idea of where we stand on the injury front.
Yeah, both certainly. Yeah, let's get on to our picks now.
All right, let's roll through these. We've got the Ravens at home against the Colts at 16.5. We saw this last week with the Colts being a 20.5, 21-point underdog at New England. They were down 31-3 and then scored, I think, three late touchdowns to easily cover. I'm going to kind of go the same way. I'm going to take the Colts, particularly if I can get 17. I don't see the Ravens beating them. I see the Ravens winning the game handily, but I'll take 17 points there.
I can lay 16.5 in this, and I'm going to hopefully I'll get 16 on this by game time. Ravens defense is a lot better than the Patriots defense.
Yep.
And Ravens are at home on this one. There's no way they don't cover on this.
Okay, Cincinnati. This is a big game for the AFC playoff picture, more so maybe for the Bengals than the Texans. The Bengals are home. They're a 3-point favorite against the Texans. This kid, T.J. Yates from North Carolina, rookie, is going to be making his second start in place of Liner, who is in place of Schaub. I didn't see the game last week, but I guess he did okay. And he did okay in that half and a little bit more that he played against Jacksonville. This is a tough game for me because I actually think the Texans are very good. We've seen the Bengals. I think they're a solid team, but I don't think they're a good team. I'll take the 3 points on the road.
I'll take the 3 points on the road too, man. Their defense, Wade Phillips has done a hell of a job with them. The you know, I just think that they can keep this game kind of in the trenches and in the running game. And I think Houston's got the much better offensive line. I think they run the ball a lot better. As long as Yates doesn't do anything stupid at quarterback, I think this is a low-scoring game. Houston pulls it out. This might end up having a push all over. Houston will cover. I thought it was Houston minus three, but give me Houston plus the three.
Staying in the 1 o'clock time zone, we got the Jets laying 10.5 at home against the Chiefs. Palko's still at quarterback. Chiefs defense is okay. One of these days, you expect the Jets to put together a complete game. Is this the week, and is 10.5 a good number? If it gets down to 10, I'm pretty inclined to lay the points. Palko in the swirling winds of the Meadowlands when it's getting cold here, as I'm in New York right now. I don't love the game, but I'm going to take the Jets and lay the points.
I will too. Plain and simple, quarterback issues for Kansas City. They're out of it. Outside of the a couple players on defense, Tom Bahaly would have to have a huge game to turn the tide here. I don't think it's enough.
Dave, I don't have a line up here on the Minnesota-Detroit game. It's because Christian Ponder is questionable about whether he's going to go. He did practice today, but he's had a hip pointer all week. Are you seeing something?
I'm seeing Detroit minus 10 here.
Detroit minus 10 sounds like the right number, but they're tough at home. I'll lay the points, and if Ponder doesn't go, I'll really lay the points.
Yeah, laying 10. This line's it might come off the board here at some point. We'll see. Give me Detroit minus 10. To me, big plays.
This is an interesting game as well. The Titans may be making a last stand for a playoff berth. They're at home against the Saints. I don't think people realize what a different team the Saints are at home and on the road, and when they're playing on the carpet or not on the carpet. Drew Brees is outstanding, but Tennessee's not a bad team, and they'll be tough at home. I kind of like the 3.5 points here, Dave. We've seen the Saints lay a couple eggs along the way, and I think they probably win the game, but 3.5 points is enough to entice me onto the Titans.
Something stinks about this game. I kind of thought this would be more along the lines of 6 in this, to be honest with you, even though Tennessee is at home on this. New Orleans has given up the big pass play. Their defense is not 100% where they should be. That being said, I just think that the Saints' offense is just too versatile, can put up too many points. I don't think Tennessee can hang with them. I'm laying the points here.
Okay, the Dolphins and the Eagles. Vic back in the under center for the Eagles. The Dolphins not playing as well as anybody in the AFC, but playing damn well, playing really good defensive football. Just beat the crap out of the Raiders last week at home. You know, if this season started 7 weeks into the, you know, if they get to start 7 weeks into the season, the Dolphins would be, you know, in the conversation with the Steelers and the Ravens and the Pats as the best team in the AFC. The Eagles, who knows what you get? You just keep thinking they're going to play well and they don't. Having Vic back certainly will help. If people don't know, I think LeSean McCoy is still leading the NFL in rushing, the Pitt grad, and that's a nice little tidbit. But they're not winning football games. I'm going to go with the Dolphins again and lay the 3, but I don't have a strong interest in betting this one.
Me either. This one kind of scares me, but I think Miami has been playing some inspired ball. I keep waiting for Matt Moore to realize he's Matt Moore, but he hasn't done it yet. And, I have no problems laying the 3 here.
The Pats are in Washington. This line is 8, down from 9. Money's been coming in on the Skins. I know some sharps like the Skins here. This feels a lot like the Dallas game that Washington played 3 weeks ago at home when they were a 7-point dog and they ended up going to overtime and Dallas pulled it out in overtime. I kind of feel like we might have the same type of situation here, kind of a 24-20 type of game. I like the 8. You know, this game looks a little bit like the Saints-Titans game where you think you get an offensive team against a bad team and they can score at will. But the Skins have been better the past couple weeks, and believe it or not, Rex Grossman's been a little bit better. 8 seems like maybe enough for me here.
I'm laying it. They're going to put up points. New England's going to put up points. I have no worries laying 8 points in this game.
All right, so we're different on the Pats and on the Saints. Your team, the Falcons, is laying 3 at Carolina. Are they going to finally get it done?
Yeah, Atlanta will get it done. Carolina, they can hang with some people on offense. Cam Newton with those explosive plays and all. That being said, Carolina's defense, really, if they had any defense whatsoever, You know, they'd be in a lot more of these games. I think Matt Ryan rebounds here. They cover the three.
What do you got for Tampa and the Jags? We've got some quarterback issues there. I got no line in front of me.
I'm seeing Tampa Bay minus two.
Okay, I'll pass.
Give me Jacksonville plus the points. Tampa Bay's awful.
Okay, 4 o'clock. We've got Oakland going to Green Bay. You know, like you like the Falcons is how I like the Raiders. They stunk it up in Miami last week. Are they going to be able to do enough in terms of running the ball against the Green Bay defense and putting up enough points to cover 11 when Green Bay puts up, you know, 28, 31, 34 against them?
I don't think so. The laundry list is hot, is big again with the receivers again this week. I just don't think it's enough. There's going to be a lot of those discount double checks in this game. Give me the Packers to cover here.
I like it. I like it. The discount double check. The Niners laying 3.5 at St. Louis. As you pointed in the Saints game, that line's 3.5. You would have thought it was 6. I would have thought this line would have been 6 also. This would be a good game to watch for Steeler fans. A, to, you know, get a sense of the Steelers' next opponent, the 49ers, and see what kind of team they are. This is a game that they should, you know, they're fighting for kind of home field advantage in that first round of the playoffs. This is the game they should win, but that 3.5 saying something to me.
Well, the good thing, as you mentioned, Arizona tries to do a lot of the same things that we do on defense. So, you know, give us a good scouting report on how they try to attack sort of a 3-4 type scheme and all like that. So that being said, I don't see how Arizona can stay in this game. So give me San Francisco, lay the points.
The whole country will be watching the Tebow Mania as the Bears go into Denver. We've got Caleb Haney, who in his first game against Oakland wasn't terrible, but threw three picks. In his second game, he was terrible and threw three picks, as the Bears have now lost two in a row, and their playoff lives are, you know, I don't know that they're hanging in the balance this week, but they're certainly a lot less comfortable than when they were with Jay Cutler, and they look like they might be the second best team in the NFC. Dave, Denver at home minus 3.5 with Tebow against a Bears offense that's going to have trouble. Are the Tebowites going to score more than 17?
You know what? I've been burned by this guy enough. Tebow blows him out this week. You heard it. You heard me right now that Tebow blows him out this week.
All right. I love it. I love it. I'm going to go with you on that. And here's my blowout. The Chargers laying 7 to the Bills. They got to feel good about what happened. They seem to have solidified the left side of their offensive line with Jared Gaithier, the kid they picked up 2 weeks ago. They lost Dielman and McNeil, but maybe they've stabilized and found things. The Bills have been up and down, mostly down lately. I think going on to the West Coast here, they get smoked. They're laying 7. I'm laying it.
I think this ends up being a field goal game. I think the Chargers win. Give me Buffalo plus the 7.5 if I can get it come game time.
All right. And a very good game on Sunday night. Two teams that have been up and down. The Giants have now lost 5 in a row. Dallas lost a horrific game last week, and they haven't put anybody away. I've kind of come to like the Giants a little bit for the first time in a long time. I have never been an Eli fan. I think he's playing good football. Ahmed Bradshaw's back, and I keep expecting Dallas to put it together. These are two teams who have kind of underachieved, and they're the two teams. One of them is going to win the NFC East, and this is going to go a long way in deciding it. Dave, is home field advantage enough and to lay 3.5, or is that extra half a point enough to put you on the Giants?
No, I think 3.5 is enough on this, as long as Jason Garrett doesn't get into icing his own kicker and all like that. I think they rebound from that loss last week. The Giants are good. They're able to stretch the field. Boy, that Victor Cruz guy, he's really making a name for himself. Hakeem Nicks, you never know if he's going to finish a whole game or not. Sometimes the guy is a brute. But, you know, this is going to be a high-scoring game, I think. But I think in the end, the Cowboys maybe pick off Eli Manning for a pick six, and that's a difference Cowboys cover.
Yeah, okay, I'll get on the other side of you there. And then another stinker on Monday night, and I don't even have a line on it. It's probably because Vegas doesn't even care. We got Bradford and the Rams at Seattle. Again, the only reason to really pay attention here is the Rams will be in Pittsburgh on Christmas Eve night playing the Steelers, Christmas Eve day playing the Steelers. What do you got there?
I'm seeing two lines. I'm seeing it at 9. I'm seeing it at 10. Regardless, Seattle's playing some real good ball. I really like what they're doing in their secondary right now. Marshawn Lynch, plenty of skittles on the sideline for him on this game. Lay the points.
Yeah, it's tough to go in there and win, and they're not going to do it. I'll lay the points as well. Dave, great stuff as always. We'll be back Monday. We'll recap a little bit more. We'll get the injuries up to date with what's going on after the Steelers' 14-3 win over the Cleveland Browns. If you were on them, unfortunately, they didn't get the cover. Ample opportunity to get that done, and they didn't. But they got the W, and they're 10-3. Their playoff berth is assured now, and it's a question of whether they are going to be the number one seed in the AFC, the number two seed in the AFC, or the number five seed in the AFC, because they will unquestionably be the number one wild card here. So anything to close us out?
No such thing as a guarantee, but yeah, if we get some help this week in some games, they will clinch at least the number six seed, and it's going to take a total collapse in these last three games not to make it, in my honest opinion. A lot of other things got to go right for some other teams there, but we appreciate everybody for listening. We got another great email this past week from a listener as well. We appreciate those. Don't be afraid to give us some feedback, and make sure to follow us on Twitter at Steelers Depot, at Hammer Speaks, at Terrible Podcast. And as always, you can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com.
All right, great stuff. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.